Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of This is CX, West Monroe Partners Customer Experience Podcast. I'm Mike Manfredo. My co-host, Paul Hagen, is currently on sabbatical, so I'm actually going to be joined by a guest co-host, Mike Roland, director in West Monroe's Customer Experience Practice, and he leads our national customer experience strategy focus. And for those of you who've listened to this podcast before, you might actually recognize his voice. Mike's joined Paul and I on a couple of previous episodes. So we've got the Mike and Mike show here for you today. And with that, welcome, Mike.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you joining us, joining me for this conversation, because I think we've got a really good episode today for two reasons. One, I think it's a really important topic to discuss today, that being, you know, how organizations can get back to work, specifically getting back to a place where they can, you know, put their organizations into a position for growth, given the current environment we find ourselves in. But then to help us with that conversation, we've got a special guest joining us today. And with that, we're going to be joined by Salesforce's Tiffany Bova. Tiffany is the global growth evangelist at Salesforce, where she helps companies reimagine how they can, you know, not only grow bigger, but grow better with innovative business models and technology. She's the author of the book Growth IQ, Get Smarter About the Choices That Will Make or Break Your Business, host of the What's Next podcast, one of iTunes' top 100 business marketing podcasts focusing on growth, innovation, customer experience, and sales, and was recently named to Thinkers 50's radar class for 2019. So with that, Tiffany, welcome. We really appreciate you joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
And, you know, Tiffany, when we have our kind of special guests join us, we also ask, you know, if you could share a little bit of your origin story and how you ultimately got to, you know, the position that you find yourself in now, focusing on growth and innovation at Salesforce.
Oh, you know, I'm gonna condense it down to a couple of things. One, I was a classic sales rep, you know, and stumbled my way into learning how to sell technology. And then that was sort of the beginning. Like, once I got into that groove, it expanded as I moved up in responsibility within organizations, both startups and Fortune 500s. But I started in sales, and then I was fortunate enough to take over parts of marketing and parts of customer service. And then at two startups, I managed all three of those. And so it gave me a really good perspective on the actual doing side of some of the topics we're going to talk about today. And then I spent a decade at Gartner as a research fellow covering the topics of sales transformation, the impact of technology on the way consumers and businesses want to engage with brands. And I was also part of the team that said that customer experience was going to be the next battleground, and that the chief marketer would spend more than the CIO. And that was probably now 8 or 9 years ago when we made that statement. And then many big tech companies went off and made acquisitions, including Salesforce and SAP, Microsoft, Oracle, in trying to capture some of that chief marketer spend, if you will, as it related to customer experience. So this topic has been near and dear to my heart for some time. And then my very first chapter in the book Growth IQ is all about customer experience. So, you know, this is how I ended up here. I just accidentally found my way in a topic and with a company that I'm really passionate about. So I feel blessed.
That's great. I feel like when we talk to folks, that it's kind of by chance, or they ended up there, not necessarily with a path to get there, but through experience as they go along. So that's, I love that.
Yeah. So Tiffany, the idea of CX kind of being the next best and biggest battleground, I think that was prescient. I mean, we're there, right? But now we find ourselves in a really unique and somewhat unprecedented situation, given the COVID-19 epidemic and the resulting current economic state. But when we've been talking with our clients and customers, we've been talking about moving back towards growth. Basically that, yes, that there was a time to play defense, becoming more efficient. Obviously, efficiency never really stops. But the idea being that now is the time to start thinking about offense. We call it the great restart. Basically that it's time to start playing offense. As you talk to your customers, and are approaching, you know, different conversations that you may be having with other organizations, what are they talking about right now in terms of getting back to business and beginning to grow again?
It's a great question. There's a few kind of asterisks, caveats, if you will, I'm going to add to what you just said, but because there's many companies who have been working, just working remotely. And so part of this back to work is kind of back to the office kind of work versus how are we going to now navigate this experience of a hybrid model of not only employees of companies, some are going to be in the office, some will remain working from home. The same will happen at the customer layer, right? There will be customers of your company, especially in the B2B space, that will be working from home or working from the office. And so that kind of connection and experience shifts dramatically because of that. Because it used to be, well, I'm just going to drive by the office and see my client. Well, now they work from home. You're not going to drive by their house kind of a thing, right? At what point does that not become okay, right? And it can't be, well, we'll meet at a coffee shop today, because you can't do that either, you know, depending on where you are in the world or in what city, county, state. So, you know, I'd say that now the experience is much more nuanced because it isn't just about frictionless. It's about, are you going to help me? Because, you know, my office is closed or my people are struggling or I'm struggling and you're a provider or vendor or solution provider for me, whatever it might be. And so this experience has to be both on the experience of whatever product or service you're selling, but also this experience of, well, what are your values and how are you behaving and what are you doing for me as your customer during this time where it's really challenging, right? Getting to your comment of getting back to growth. Mm-hmm. And thinking about what that looks like. It's like, you don't want to just be calling your customers if you're a salesperson every day and being like, buy from me, buy from me, buy from me over the last 60 days. That's probably not going to get you, you know, business.
Not gonna get
you far. Yeah, not a very effective strategy, right?
Today. And so it's kind of like, how do you lean into empathy? And when you say that, people are like, oh, right? Like,
touchy-feely, don't give me hugs.
I can't measure empathy. I can't manage empathy. How do I train empathy? Like all that kind of stuff, right? But it has everything to do with, are you like listening? Are you meeting with customers? Are you doing things like coffee hours where you're just open and it's a Zoom call, your customers can come in and ask questions and talk to each other? You know, are you doing it for your employees? Like, experience now is not only just how, you know, a customer may feel when they engage with your brand, but the fastest way to get your customers to love your brand is to get your employees to love their job. So, you know,
very true.
Getting them to love their job has all kinds of different experience implications. And then you say, okay, if I can settle and stabilize my employees and how they're feeling, they will be in a much better position to be empathetic and deliver these compelling experiences for my customers going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for the folks on the podcast who've been listening to the series here, we talk about this in terms of not just focusing on the customer scoring or metric that you're following, whether it's NPS or customer stat, but also paying very close attention to your employee scores, whether that's empowerment or another metric you have internally, because without those employees, you're never going to be able to deliver on your customer promise to your customers.
Absolutely. And I think people miss that. It's a subtlety, right? It's really just a subtlety. So when people say, oh, we are totally customer obsessed, you know, you could say an Amazon. Or you could say, you know, any brand that's like, we are totally customer centric. While I like that, I like, we are employee first and customer centric, because you can be both, yes. You know, you could be both. But if you say, well, we're employee first and customer first, you can't have two firsts. So like, what is your first order of business is, if my employees are happy, you know, my customers are happy. And if those two things are in place, my customers will buy more. My employees don't turn over. I don't have that kind of issue. And if my employees are happy and my customers are happy, my revenue should go up. And if that happens, my shareholders are happy. And so it's this flywheel of, you have to have something at the center. And if your customers are at the center, of every decision you make, which I completely agree with, the only way to make that happen is you have to enable and empower your employees to serve those customers in a way that they want to be served.
Yeah, absolutely. When you think about, though, where we're coming today, I think I want to focus on the B2B side for just a minute, because I think that's a much harder world right now, given the uncertainty and things like business risk and credit risk and all that other good stuff that goes into the B2B thinking around customer. So as you think about some of the organizations and the focus on B2B, how do they reset? I mean, what are some of the things you're hearing in terms of getting back and focusing on the client? And the reason I bring that up is because we've been talking with clients about the idea of going back and moving beyond traditional kind of amount of sales as a way to segment clients and instead look at not just profitability, but economic risk, how much their cost to serve is, things like that. But as you see the great reset coming in your world, what does that look like from B2B perspective?
Yeah, and this may be a little, I don't know what the right word is. Maybe you could tell me what the word is after I say what I'm about to say. But I feel like the lines are blurring between B2B and B2C. And I've said this now for almost 7 years. And that came from each buyer, if you're buying in a B2B environment, is a consumer every day of their life, in their personal lives. And they don't leave their consumer hat at the door when they walk into work. So the expectations that are happening in the B2C side, especially in experience, are now expected on the B2B side plus, meaning Salesforce has done a bunch of research where we actually show that the experience B2B buyers expect is higher than that of B2C. So it's not when you give examples like, oh, Starbucks and Uber and what, everyone's like, oh, Tiffany, those are consumer examples. I'm a B2B company. Give me a B2B example. And I go, yeah, every buyer you're selling to buys from Amazon and buys from Starbucks and buys from Zappos and buys from, you know, whomever it might be that you hold up as a CX leader, if you will, right? And then you say, and they want to have that similar experience in their B2B world. So I believe B2B marketers, sellers, whatever it might be, customer service leaders, customer success leaders, should look to B2C as signals for what are their consumers now experiencing in their personal lives that they would then come and say, okay, well, why in my business life is it so difficult? Why do I need 4 signatures and I have to go walk around to get it? When I do something in my personal life, you know, I can sign it online and I can share it and collaborate, you know what I mean? Like I could do all that, but at work, I have to print it, put it in a folder, walk it around, get everyone to sign it, fax it back. You know, a week later, I've gotten something done.
Yeah. Go into the world of customer service and it can be even crazier, right?
Yeah. And so that's why I appreciate, don't get me wrong, I appreciate the focus on B2B or the focus on B2C, but I'm making, and this is a sweeping non-statistical research assumption, that, you know, 90, 85, 90% of the experience in B2B and B2C is the same. Then you have by industry, by vertical, you know, are you in a highly regulated industry? Okay, well, that throws all the rules out, right? If you're in a not-for-profit, if you're in a country where, you know, or it's language, or you're in a country where you can't communicate via social or use certain tools, you know, yes. And so I want to acknowledge all the asterisks, you know, and the, well, what abouts, but 80% or 85 or 90% is, look, I want you to treat me like you know me. You know what I've done with you in the past. You know what I've bought from you. You know the last time I called. You don't call me when I have a ticket open and I'm maybe a little upset at you. You don't try to upsell, cross-sell, or resell me something when I'm clearly not using what you've already sold me. You know, those kinds of things. I think that should be consistent. I don't know. What do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, I agree that, and we talk about this all the time with some of our clients, in that customers are always bringing in those expectations that they're being set in their own personal lives. So you have to be able to, it doesn't mean you have to be Amazon, but you have to understand that that is the bar or the lens through which those customers that you're engaging with are looking through. So it's a matter of them making the intentional decisions around, you know, how am I going to ultimately compete, and what kind of experience am I ultimately going to offer in order to meet that need. And right. I think that gets into understanding who your target customers are, what their needs, what their goals, what their behaviors are. I think you kind of mentioned this earlier in that you need to be able to listen to your customers, understand, empathize with. But given we just went, we're going through this incredible time right now where it's impacting the way that people operate on a daily basis. What have you or Salesforce seen in customers' behaviors and expectations shift in the last, let's call it, you know, 3+ months? That businesses need to begin addressing or take into consideration as they start to shift into a more growth-focused mode?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we went out, this example is a Salesforce example, you know, and we continue to, it's this heavy dose of listening. All of us, sales, our customer success teams, everybody, the executives, like everybody is in massive listening mode. We're listening for signals and what customers want from us and expect. You know, we're not in a tell mode, we're in a listen mode, an aggregate mode, and share back out mode. You know, kind of this, we have a series called Leading Through Change. Mm-hmm. And so we're letting our customers say, here's how we pivoted our business during this time. And it may be insightful or may give a roadmap for someone else to go, oh, didn't think of that, right? Versus us standing up and going, here's what we think you should do, right? So very much letting our customers tell their stories of how they've been able to pivot, reimagine, reinvent, make investments. You know, oh my goodness, we didn't have the ability to work remotely, and in 72 hours we had to do that. Or, you know, we have a call center that we have to maintain and everyone's from home. Like, how do we do that? And then, you know, like, or, you know, we manufacture X and the world needs Y right now. Let's pivot, you know, whatever it might be. And so we've done a lot of that listening, but we found kind of three main tracks. And you mentioned it at the beginning of this. One was kind of stabilize the business. Like at first, the initial shock of, oh my goodness, everything is shut down. Everyone's working from home. And now I have to, you know, manage my pipeline and my forecast and my people and my teams and service customers and do shipping and returns and logistics and supply chain from my house. Oh, while at the same time, my kids are home, but you know, I can't get any, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. So the first phase was obviously stabilize, and where you were in the world, companies and industries were at different phases of that stabilized track. And mm-hmm. now if you look at, like, I'm in Los Angeles in Southern California, like we just re-locked down on yesterday in 7 counties, right? I'm in LA, so I'm one of them. So nightclubs, bars shut back down. It was sort of, you know, unfortunately we've had a spike. And so, you know, it's kind of this, well, we stabilized and then you think you're good. It shows back up again, throws everything back into the mix. And so the first one was stabilized. The second one was back to work, but I kind of qualified that a little bit and kind of said, kind of back to the office. Like, how are you going to get people now back to the office? Oh, is it a 4-day work week? Is it split shifts? Does everyone need to be back in the office? I mean, that is a massive undertaking. Contact tracing, who's where, what, you know what I mean? Open this office, don't open that office, every floor, every pod, every, you know, meeting room, like getting back to work is a big, complicated, changing daily situation. The third track was getting back to growth. And the recommendation really was you want to have a core team focused on each of those. And if you're a very small business listening to this and you're like, I have a team of 10, like I don't have 10 people or 8 people or 3 people. Somebody needs to be focused exclusively on each of those tracks. It doesn't mean they're the only person, but someone needs to own each so that you have these work streams constantly, like someone who's watching the back to work, you know what I mean? Back to the office.
Yeah.
It's not the same person who's looking at, oh my goodness, we need to stabilize. Like, you know what I'm saying? So sort of divide and conquer, if you will. And I think since our topic is customer experience, I would layer that with, okay, what do we do? The employee experience, if all of a sudden we have to shut down again, you know, and then the customer experience, if we have to shut back down again, and then what's the experience for the employee and how can teams collaborate from someone who's in the office to someone's at home or everybody's at home or whatever it might be. So if experience, and we start with that employee experience is at the center, and then obviously customer centricity and customer experience is the ring right outside of that, you could see it play a role in each of those three phases. And then it's really about, not to get too deep in the weeds in this, but it's almost like you have to scenario plan. Okay, what
That's
if
exactly
we...
That's exactly what came to my mind as you're saying.
Yep, because like, what do we do if we're back in 3 months or 6 months or 12 months? Like what, and if you, the more advanced work you put into these kinds of questions, you don't have to do it in the thick of the panic. You know what I mean? That right, you're doing it with a much clearer head. And so, you know, now that we're, depending on where you are, once again, kind of, you know, middle of March, we're almost 4 months in the US in dealing with this. Other parts of the world are 5, 6, 7 months in, well, let's say 5 or 6 months in. And I think until, you know, we have a vaccine and we have more understanding of a lot of this, that, I think we're going to be coming in and out of these phases for a period of time. Right.
Yeah. Well, and that creates a whole unique challenge in and of itself in that, you know, we talked about, you mentioned the idea of, as a competitive advantage, delivering a consistent experience to the customers and frankly to the employees too in driving that virtuous cycle. But what we're dealing with is a situation that consistency is a, or, you know, anticipation and knowing what's going to happen is pretty much gone out the window, right? So it's now I have to, how do I deliver an experience that is flexible but yet consistent, even if I have to shut down parts of the business here, redistribute people there, et cetera, you know, engage customers differently at a moment's notice, but yet still feel like it's one and the same for an organization, you know, to continue to build that credibility, that trust, that loyalty with the customer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know, what tends to get, so here's the conversation I had pre-COVID. And then, so the pre-COVID conversation was, who owns customer experience?
It's a great question.
Been there, done that. Yes.
And my answer is everyone. It's a little That's sassy, right. but I'll go with that.
Yeah.
So I say everyone. Well, no, the chief marketing officer owns it. I'm like, okay, if that makes me feel better, have at it. But I think everyone owns customer experience. Who owns the metric for customer experience might be the CMO.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a subtle difference, right? So the pre-COVID conversation was who owns customer experience? How do I measure it? How do I manage it? Should I be using Net Promoter Score? Should I be using CSAT surveys? Should I be using, you know what I mean? Like, how do I know what that means, right? Because it's a, as you said, it's a soft, touchy, feely kind of that stuff I can't measure, manage. So I don't like it. Although we started this conversation with customer experience being the new battleground, but if you have executives who can't measure and manage it and don't feel like they can, you know, see and touch what they need to do in order to improve performance as it relates to experience, then it becomes this, you know, black hole of talking a lot and not actually actioning anything.
Right.
Post, you know, all this kind of, so I'm guessing you guys heard the same thing.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then now it's about, okay, now we've got habits that have changed, people's familiarity. Like I have had probably 500 conversations over the last 14 or 15 years, if not more, with sales leaders or salespeople, probably more, who say, I'm special. I have to go visit my customer face to face. Skin to skin, shake their hand, take them on the golf course, have them, take them to dinner, do whatever. That's how I build my relationship. There's no way I'm going to use AI automation. You know what I mean? Like automated emails, like CRM in that way. It's in my head. Like I've been able to, you know, that kind of thing. And I think now that selling remote is the new reality. And for those people who relied too heavily on that face-to-face experience selling motion or marketing motion, if you will, right? Found themselves at a big disadvantage versus those who are like, oh, I'm all in and using technology and not having to spend half my week in behind the windshield, which takes me away from selling. Like, how can I see more customers in a given day and scale and give them experience they expect? I think now people have realized that, and we've come to tolerate in a way that doesn't feel like we're tolerating it anymore, that it's just become part of our day. Like, we hop on a video call. And you've had to find a way to become engaging, interested, interesting, deliver compelling experiences. It's like listening to this podcast, right? Podcasts are flat. They're one-dimensional. It's just voice. Mm-hmm. And so if you come with no energy or passion, it's sort of like, okay, I'm here to talk to you about customer experience. It's kind of exciting for me. Like, I don't know. You know, I had this, went to the store and this is what I felt. And you're sort of like, yeah, next, right? You just... So if you don't do that in video or voice calls now, or you're not creative in using social platforms and collaboration in different ways, I think we have forced the hand of those that were resistant to using technology as a replacement in some cases, but in most cases, augmenting the human aspect of it. I think now they've realized, wow, there was so much I wasn't doing. At least I hope that's what they're saying, and they're not totally... mortified, right, or petrified with what's happening. Right. Yeah.
No. Yeah. So Tiffany, I mean, that's a great point, because prior to this, you know, our conversations around selling and salespeople were exactly what you were saying, right? It's like, I have to go press the flesh. I have to be there in person. And no, I don't really need this tool or that tool. I've got it. You know, and what we would always counter with was, what happens when that person leaves? Do you have to go back to zero and start again? How do you know where you are? But that's now shifted to, I don't think those people want to leave. I think they want to stay, but they have to retrain. They have to kind of regroup and think of new ways to do things. And that leads me to innovation. Because when we talk about restart or reset, any way you're looking at growth, and you're looking to change the narrative and how can you start to succeed and thrive, we believe that innovation is critical. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on innovation coming out of what we are in right now, or even during. How should you be thinking, and how should organizations be thinking about innovation at this point?
Yeah, there's a few things I'd say there. One, I'd say that all you have to do is look back at the Great Recession, kind of 6 to 9, you know, 2006, 2009, 7 to 9, 7 to 10-ish, you know what I mean? And that was very focused on the financial services and kind of real estate market, and almost exclusively in the US, if you will. Out of that was, okay, what jobs to be done, to use that jobs to be done concept, that were lacking during that time. And you saw things like Pinterest and Dropbox and Box and Instagram and lots of companies be born during that last recession. So I'm super excited from an innovation standpoint to see what comes out of this current environment. And I hope it's things about driving, you know, innovating to drive this kind of democratization to the access to things that many have, but many don't have. You know, there's sort of 17 million people or so, while a small percentage in the 330 million in the US, that don't have access to high-speed internet. And so, mm-hmm, you think, okay, we've just shut everything down, sent all the kids home, everything's, and they don't have access to the internet. And so how do they get educated? How do they order food? How do they order anything? Like, how do they get anything? I can't leave, right? And so during the first couple of weeks of the full shutdown, the Starbucks closest to me, the parking lot was full. I was very interested in why that was the case. I'm like, what am I missing? Is Starbucks open? Right? So I drove through the parking lot. And sure enough, everyone was sitting in their cars with their laptops open. They're on their phone. Their kids are in the car. What were they doing? Free Wi-Fi. Yep. And I'm in Los Angeles, California. I'm in Hollywood. So then you go, okay, right? This is not everyone had access to be able to order Uber Eats and educate their kids and, you know, what, how do they work and all of those things. So for me, I hope we innovate on some of these key axes that have shown themselves during this time of,
Sure.
You know, education for everybody and equal at that in, you know, how do we do that where we can, you know, have a way in which education can happen if it's not physically at schools. Same thing for healthcare, you know, same thing for conducting business, you know, all those things. So I hope innovation really starts to tackle some of these big social inequalities that we have. And I'm specifically, I'm not at this moment in that example, I'm talking about kind of education, healthcare, mm-hmm. That's sure. where I'm focused right there, you know, in that particular comment. So, you know, I think that there's so much we can do there. Like, will ed tech now be what VCs really dial into? Like, who's going to help solve that problem? You know, where are there, is there platforms on education now that were not for K through 12, as an example, that could be reimagined to now satisfied? It wasn't for adult learning or continuing education. It's now for K through 12, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I'm super excited to see what happens from an innovation standpoint. But the other comment you made at the beginning of that question, I believe that the backbone of corporate growth is personal growth. That if we don't all personally get uncomfortable to uncover the things we maybe are not that good at. So I'm going to go back to the example I gave earlier. Some salespeople are amazing in person. You put them on the phone, they're not as good. You put them on video, maybe they're not as good, right? Because they're very comfortable in the face-to-face. So maybe they need to hone their skills on how to have a conversation, not talk so much on the phone. Like, you can't see the cues, the visual cues of what's happening. You know, maybe I don't know how to be good on video. What should I be doing? Like, you know, you have to be this, what can I unlearn from a habits perspective so I can relearn and reskill for what my company and my customers will need for me in the future, regardless of what your role is. And that's where I think there's so much opportunity, but you have to be willing as an individual to say, I have to unlearn some of my habits so that I can reskill and relearn because I'm trying to keep pace with what my customers expect from me. Or, you know what? I might want to try something totally different. And then that mm-hmm. means you have to reskill yourself, which I think either example is a good idea. Because if you just sort of go, look, I'm going to show up to work the same way I always have and do the same thing I always have and communicate with my customers the way I always have, I worry you may fall into a category of your customers saying you weren't empathetic enough, you weren't, you know, you didn't care about their success, or, you know, you weren't adding value, you weren't bringing insights. You know what I'm saying? Like, it yeah. sounds like you're talking to me from July of 2019 and it's about to be July 2020. And that's not where we're talking about right now, right? So
yeah,
that would be my answer to that.
Sure. And to add into that, or I think complement it, I agree with that. I think that also brings to the forefront the concept of being nimble, right? When I look at who's doing well, we have clients that we know are doing very well right now because they are nimble. They're thinking proactively and trying to bring their staff along very quickly, change management notwithstanding, but their staffs are thinking nimbly too. How do we best deliver to the client? How do we best deliver to the customer or consumer? And it does start, as you say, individually. You have to be ready to go. In this pandemic and the resulting economic issues that it has caused, I think certainly are providing a catalyst for a decent amount of companies to start thinking that way because their employees are already there. And so we have to break out some of the what we call organizational concrete in order to allow the organization to be more nimble and responsive to better meet the changed needs of customers.
Yeah, I also wonder if this, you know, unlike I'm sure, Tiffany, you've heard this pre-COVID when you're talking to clients or folks who are, they're trying to make changes, trying to get people to adopt new set of technology, a new way of doing business. And it took so much. And you had the people who were still, you know, back to your example of the sales person who says, no, I've been doing it this way for so long and it's worked so well. Why would I give this up now? But I think in many ways, this situation has given, I think, organizations, employees, kind of almost a permission structure to be able to say, the way I used to do it is not going to work. I literally cannot go to someone's house or to an office and, yep. you know, try to do it. So I think you kind of said, you know, it accelerated that or, you know, certainly kind of pushed them to kind of over the tipping point. But the idea of embracing that and the, you know, everyone's going through change at one time versus one company is going through change at one time can help, I believe, accelerate some of at least the mindset shift to adopt new ways of working.
Well, there's a couple things you said there. You know, if you think about what's getting, you know, how many conversations I've had with salespeople who have said this, you know, pre-COVID was, yeah, you know, that's on our list of things to do. We'll get to it. Right now, this is what's most important for us. And then COVID hit. And it was like this wrecking ball into every single project you've put on hold is now the most important priority.
Yeah.
Right. And so now everybody's in the middle of a transformation. They're digitally transforming. They're automating this. They're adding AI. They're, you know what I mean? And I'm only going to use my like little local examples, right? There was a little diner I went to and I had had some neck surgery at the end of 2019. So, you know, I went in, I said, I'm going to have a big, you know, big meal before, you know, this week before I have to go into surgery. And then I'm, you know, not going to be eating very much for about a week. Right. So, and I said, hey, do you guys deliver? Like, do you work with, you know, Uber Eats or Task, you know, or Grubhub or anybody like that? Oh, no, you know, no, we've been, you know, we're a family business. We've been around for 60 years. And, you know, we like our little business. I'm like, okay, boom, COVID hits.
Mm-hmm.
So 3 months goes by. They're completely shut down. So about a month ago, you know, I did a little drive-by and sure enough, there was a little sign out going, takeout orders, you know, once sort of Los Angeles started figuring out, okay, we were totally shut down. And then how are we going to kind of let businesses get back? You know, so it's like, okay, you only do takeout kind of a thing. You know what I mean? So it's sort of let's crawl, walk, run. So let's do takeout. And then it was, then I saw them say, oh, you can order from Grubhub or Uber Eats. And you know, so last week I went in and I said, hey, they're like, hey, and I said, remember that conversation I had with you? You wouldn't have been down for 3 months.
Yeah.
Right. And listen, every reason they gave me was valid. Like, who in the wildest dreams would believe the entire world would shut down?
Mm-hmm.
Like 7.6 billion people, except those that, you know, don't even know what's going on, right? Which is, that's also a reality.
Yeah.
So let's say 6 billion people, everybody shut down, you know? And so, you know, those kinds of projects now when I went in there, by the way, they had 3 iPads set up. One had a little sticker under that said Uber Eats. Then one was Grubhub. One was, you know what I mean? And they're like, they're like, we are crazy busy. And I'm like, imagine that.
Yeah.
Right. And so this goes also back to, but what they didn't have was they didn't have a customer database. They didn't know who I was. They couldn't have communicated with me. Well, let me say that differently. They didn't communicate with me to let me know that I could now order via Uber Eats or Grubhub because they didn't know who I was. Even though they saw me once or twice a week, they knew nothing more about me. You know what I'm saying? So, so imagine if they had had a CRM system and they'd been saying, hey, sign up for our mailing list. And then they could have sent an email blast out to the 3,000 people on their mailing list to say, hey, we've got Uber Eats. Or we've got Grubhub, or we're open for delivery or whatever, but they had no ability to communicate. The only reason I knew was I drove by.
Yep.
So that goes back to, this is not just technology, right? This has everything to do with people and process. So digital transformation to me is digital as technology. Transformation is people process. And people spend a lot of time focused on the digital, the technology conversation. And then they install, implement, deploy the latest, greatest technology. And then they don't change anything on the people process side and it falls flat. And then the CFO or the CEO or the leadership team or the board or whoever goes, that was a complete waste of money.
Missed the mark.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for. And so now, since I joined Salesforce, I'd say in the last 4.5 years since I've been here, that part of the conversation on people and process is almost where I spend 75% of my conversation time. It's I rarely talk about the technology, as I never did when I was at Gartner either. And so, you know, ultimately for me, now it's this change management, people, reskill, do I have the right people? Do I have the right organizational structure? Am I, you know what I mean? Like, am I going in the right direction? And this is about resilience and agility. And so if you can't move fast, it's much more difficult.
Well, maybe on that note, I think we can go ahead and wrap up. Tiffany, maybe I'll end on this one last question. Given everything that's going on, all the change that you're seeing, helping organizations get back to growth, are there any silver linings or key learnings that we haven't already touched on for whether it's customers or focusing on employees that organizations can take from this experience to set themselves up for long-term success?
My number one and default answer to a question like that is always, don't know the answer. And the reason I say it that way, so 10 years ago, I would have answered right away. Here's what I think. 12 years ago, probably the same thing, because 14. So, you know, when I first started at Gartner was 2006. So let's call it 2007 to probably 2014, maybe 2013. I'd say, here's the answer. Then I realized what a disservice I was doing, that my answer to that question is, I don't know, but what do your customers say? What do your employees say? And that opens an entirely different conversation, because for me to go, here's what I think. Number one, I don't know their culture. Number two, I probably don't know their, you know, employee culture, what their customer experience is, what their customers want. I mean, I could ask all those questions, like what's your net promoter score? Like what's your churn rate of employees and your customer? You know what I mean? I could ask a lot of those questions and maybe then, but I used to just answer boom right away. And now I say, start with your employees and then work your way to your customers, bring in your own sort of, you know, thinking, and that sometimes that's a bias. And so the employee and customers sort of checks that bias just in case that we've always done it this way. We tried it that way. It didn't work 5 years ago, so we're not going to try it again. Or you know what I'm saying? Like you always get that default answer. So my default answer now to a question like that is ask your employees, ask your customers, and you have to be really, really willing to listen. And if you go and ask them and both groups, and you end up doing the same thing anyway, and you were just trying to validate your own thinking, and you said, they don't know what they're talking about, then shame on you, right? But if you say, look, there's just a slight pivot, and sometimes that slight pivot helps you make the home run, right? If you just change your weight on your swing at the mound at a baseball or at a baseball game or just at the golf course, right? And you just, you know, I don't know if you've ever watched Tiger Woods training and he'll be like, do I move 2% to the left? The wind is blowing at blah, 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 blah. Right. Well, if he hit it straight, it would have, you know, it would have been like you and I playing. I'm just aiming for that little flag up there. You put the science behind it and you say, well, give me these data points. And now I'm going to change what club, change what swing, change what, you know, open face, closed face for those of you who play golf. You know what I mean? Like those little changes and boom, he is who he is. So, you know, you can either just stand behind the goal of yours and take a swing, or you can say, am I taking the right swing with the right club, with the right product, with the right channel, with the right people, with the right message? And that can only be answered by your employees or your customers.
Yeah, love that. All right. Well, Tiffany, thank you so much for joining Mike and I. I really appreciate you sharing our thoughts and having conversation on this. You're welcome back anytime. So please, we really appreciate you taking the time today.
Of course. Thanks for having me. I could talk about customer experience all day. Love it.
So could we. Yeah. Thanks, Tiffany.
And Mike, thanks for stepping in as my guest co-host. Thank you to everyone for tuning into this episode. Really appreciate you taking the time to listen. Hopefully you got some good nuggets to take away and start acting on as you're going through your own changes to your business. Please, if you have thoughts that you want to share, reach out to us via social media or the email address in the description notes of the podcast. But thanks again. Have a great rest of the day.